Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal, Canby, in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
I'm with an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If you would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This Canby podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Anessa McClendon, and this is what's happening this week in our community. Canby City Councilor David Bajoran has resigned after being appointed to the position just 6 months ago, citing the difficulty of juggling it along with other responsibilities and admitting he felt stretched too thin. Bajoran replaced Jordan Tibbles, who was elected in November 2020, but stepped down 9 months later after moving out of state. It has come to my attention recently that my role as a counselor for the city of Canby has had an undue negative effect on my other jobs as well as my family, Bajoran wrote in his brief resignation letter to the mayor, city council president, city administrator, and city recorder Monday night. I am simply stretched too thin to be effective at balancing so many things at once. That is why, regrettably, I need to resign my seat effective immediately. I am thankful for the time I have had to serve and wish you all the best of fortune in bringing the very best out of the city. This particular seat has been the hottest on the Canby City Council in recent years, even as other local elective offices have seen relatively little turnover. Tracy Height, an incumbent, originally won it in 2018, but resigned 6.5 months in, citing a desire to spend more time with family. Per city charter, the remaining councilors appointed a replacement who was to serve until November 2020, when Canby's voters would have the opportunity to choose a representative for the term's remaining 2 years. Councilors in 2019 selected Trigg Bergie, who had planned to seek re-election the following year, but instead announced his resignation in August 2020 when a move outside the city made him ineligible to serve on the council. Tibbles was elected to the 2-year term after finishing fourth in the 2020 race, and Bajoran became the fourth individual to hold the seat in as many years following his appointment in October. Presumably, a fifth name will be added to that list before the November midterms, when the seat will once again go on the ballot for a full 4-year term. Not every day does a person have the opportunity to shake the hand of someone who helped save their life, but such was the case for Will Dittmar on Tuesday morning. On March 2nd, the 65-year-old Canby resident was the subject of a frantic 911 call by his wife Cindy. Canby Police Officer Chris Sharmoda and Canby Fire Emergency Medical Technicians arrived on the scene to find him unresponsive. Less than a month later, on March 29th, he was back on his feet at a small ceremony at the Canby Fire District headquarters on South Ivy Street to thank Sharmoda and the other emergency responders who helped save his life. "It's good to see you again," he said with a chuckle. "My wife is much too young to be a widow." Canby Fire Paramedics Division Chief Matt Dale described the occasion as a short event that we do when extraordinary things happen. We had an extraordinary event that happened on March 2nd, 2022, Dale continued. Due to the quick actions of every one of the people here today, our patient survived that event and is here with us today. In addition to Sharmoda, the event honored Canby Fire Captain Derek Clark and firefighter paramedics Josh Christensen, Josh Baratich, Keith Nichols, Scott Davis, Julio Quevedo, and Jack Shun, along with three Clackamas County 911 dispatchers, Jen, Shyla, and Bethany. Officials describe the multi-agency partnership as the chain of survival. At Tuesday's events, Canby Fire Chief Jim Davis and Police Chief George Trow presented each of the officers, firefighters, and dispatchers with a certificate and challenge coin, while Dittmar received a coin along with a printout of the actual defibrillator reading that restarted his heart on March 2nd. "Thank you," Dittmar said after receiving the gifts. "I'm indebted to each and every one of you." For photos, find the story on our website, canbyfirst.com, or follow the Canby Current on Facebook and Instagram. On Wednesday morning, a handful of relatives of the women killed by Dayton Leroy Rogers gathered yet again for what they hoped would be the last hearing in the tortured case of Oregon's most prolific serial killer. It was not to be. Rogers, now 68, has been scheduled to be sentenced for a fifth time in what has become one of the longest-running cases in state history. But the last-minute legal wrangling in the 33-year-old prosecution prompted the Clackamas County Circuit Court to set aside the sentencing for another day. The Oregon Supreme Court last fall had overturned Rogers' death sentence, saying an earlier ruling on another death penalty case applied to Rogers and that his crime no longer met the definition of aggravated murder, the only offense eligible for capital punishment in Oregon. That sent the case back to Oregon City for another sentencing hearing. In the four previous resentencing hearings, juries chose the death penalty for Rogers. Rogers' lawyers, Richard Wolf and Lynn Morgan, thought to have him sentenced under rules in place at the time of his conviction in the late 1980s. Rogers would have been eligible then only for a sentence of life with the possibility of parole after 30 years. In theory, those sentences could be stacked on top of one another for a sentence of 180 years in the death of six women in this case. Clackamas County Prosecutor Scott Healy and Brian Brock argued that Rogers should be sentenced under current law, which gives the court two options: life without parole or life with the possibility of parole after 30 years. Rogers was 33 at the time he killed six women. Rogers was convicted in 1989 of killing Lisa Marie Mock, 23, Maureen Ann Hodges, 26, Christine Lotus Adams, 35, Cynthia Diane DeVore, 20, Nandis K. Cervantes, 26, and Retha Marie Giles, 16. Separately, he was convicted of killing Jennifer Lisa Smith, 25, in 1988. The remains of his eighth victim, Tanya Marie Johnson, 18, were found in 2013. He admitted he killed Johnston in a 2015 court hearing, but was never charged with her death. Clackamas County Public Health on Tuesday issued a public health advisory to call attention to the county's fentanyl crisis, as evidenced by a sharp increase of overdoses of the powerful and potentially deadly opioid. Last year, opioid overdose hospitalizations increased 18%, officials said, while hospitalizations related to fentanyl and other synthetic opioids more than doubled, Oregon now ranks first in prescription opioid misuse and dead last in access to treatment, with 1 in 5 Oregonians needing but not receiving treatment. Fentanyl is a synthetic opiate found in counterfeit prescription drugs, estimated to be 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine. Even a small amount can be lethal. 2 Portland teens died within 24 hours of each other taking pills laced with fentanyl just last month, while the largest fentanyl seizure in Oregon history was made at a Clackamas County Home Depot recently. Officials say the drug is being widely used by residents in the Tri-County area and across the state, both intentionally and unintentionally, by taking a pill thought to be a regulated prescription drug like Oxycontin or Xanax, but which actually contains fentanyl. There is not a certain type of person who is impacted by overdose from fake pills, said Clackamas County Public Health Director Philip Mason Joyner. It affects everyone. Officials warn that teens and youth are being targeted online as social media platforms are increasingly used to buy and sell drugs, many of which are counterfeit. Parents and trusted adults should talk to teens about the dangers of fake pills and how to stay safe while online, Mason Joyner continued. Maintain open communication and remind youth that drugs or medication that are not taken as prescribed from a doctor or pharmacist could contain fentanyl and be very dangerous. Resources and support services are available through Clackamas County, local school districts, and community organizations serving those at risk of substance use. Some school districts, like Oregon City, are providing training and access to naloxone, a medicine proven effective at treating opioid overdoses in emergency situations at all school facilities. For links and other resources, visit our website, canbefirst.com. Cougar Country, hometown sports coverage is brought to you by Reif & Hunsaker, PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country Pod. When the Canby Cougar baseball team came into the bottom of the 7th inning against South Ridge, things were in a tough spot. Down 1-0 with one out, the Cougars needed a miracle. Enter Theo Netter. Netter's walk-off hit capped an impressive come-from-behind win for the Cougars and kicked off a successful week for Cougar baseball, earning a 2-1 record in preparation for Three Rivers League play. Joe Brockmiller started on the mound for the Cougars, pitching 5 scoreless innings and giving up 3 hits. But while Brockmiller was busy throwing strikes, the Cougars were busy striking out. Skyhawks pitcher Joe Dodge excelled on the mound for Southridge, throwing 9 strikeouts in 6 innings pitched. After 5 innings, the game was scoreless. In the 6th, Canby head baseball coach J.J. Stalsig called Alex Evans from the bullpen to replace Brockmiller. The senior pitched well in his 2 innings in relief, striking out 5 and only allowing 1 hit. The problem was that 1 hit was a homer from none other than Joe Dodge, giving the Skyhawks a 1-0 advantage. After Evans struck out all 3 Southridge batters in quick succession in the top of the 7th, Canby had a chance to exorcise their demons. 1 week after suffering 2 walk-off losses, the Cougars could tally a walk-off of their own. Canby got that chance when Carson Goretzky singled and Hunter Robinson quickly drove him home with a triple. With the game now tied and a runner in scoring position, Theo Netter stepped up to the plate. With the infield up to prevent Robinson from running home easily, Netter slapped a chopper down the line to Jack Klee. With the wildly spinning ball bouncing off the heel of Klee's glove, Robinson scampered home to give the Cougars their first walk-off win of the year. The Cougars followed that gutsy performance Tuesday with a win over Barlow. After senior Bryce Oliver slapped a grand slam in the first inning that got the dugout up on their feet and the team out to a quick 5-0 lead in the first inning, it appeared that no late-game theatrics would be needed. But though the Cougars led 8-2 heading into the bottom of the seventh, they would have to stave off a hard-charging Barlow team bent on a comeback of their own. The Bruins managed to get 4 hits and 6 runners before Robinson stepped in at pitcher in an attempt to get his team out of a jam. With the score already narrowed to 8-7 and a man on second base, the Cougars would need another dramatic victory. Barlow's Yamoto Uptegrove sent a pitch flying into the domain of center fielder Mikey Gibson. With the tying runner Zach Groza chugging along to home, Gibson threw to his cutoff man Netter, who fired the ball to catcher Owen Tilden. The throw just beat Groza, winning the game for the Cougars once again in thrilling fashion. Canby's luck would sputter in their final game of the week against Lebanon, 2-3. Though the Cougars led 4-3 in the third thanks to a home run from offensive leader Kellen Oakes, as well as RBIs from Tilden and Casey Langsdale, Canby could not hold off the comeback attempt this time around. Lebanon scored 1 run apiece over the next 3 innings to win 6-4. After 8 games against 8 different teams, the Cougars will switch to a more traditional baseball series schedule for the Three Rivers League play. Canby will play all 3 games this week against Lake Ridge, with 2 home games and 1 away game.
Hey Tyler, read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome, what's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these 2 kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting, though. Who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor. Starts with like an S or something. Sass, sos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay. Well, hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Canby.
Yeah, guys, this local, independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Canby. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expansive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcanby.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read. Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
This is Roz Mason, and I'm running for State Senate District 26, which now includes Canby. I know we need affordable housing, a strong local economy, and to face climate challenges of wildfire and heat waves like last year's that hit 118 in the Dalles, where I live. Climate courage also includes upsides, like becoming more energy independent using renewables and helping our district get in on innovative technology and manufacturing jobs. I'm visiting Canby and Sandy April 14th through 16th. I'd love to see you. Visit masonfororegon.com for info and to get a yard sign. Paid for by Mason for Oregon.
Joining us on the KAMBI Conversation today is Laurel Roses. She is a resident of the Malino-Malala area, which is newly a part of the redrawn Congressional District 5, and she's running to represent that district in this year's election. Hi, Laurel.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm good. Well, awesome. Kind of good.
Yeah. About the best we can hope for these days, huh?
Yeah,
You're a little under the weather.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Laurel, and why you chose to jump into the race.
Okay. I was born and raised in Boring, Oregon, and everybody thinks I'm dissing the state, but the little town that I grew up in is actually called Boring. Mm-hmm. It's in rural Clackamas County. And my husband and I raised our children in rural Clackamas County. He grew up in Estacada. So when they redistricted and I saw that the new District 5 was full of a lot of small towns and rural communities, I knew that that was my opportunity to be a voice for those people who tend to get ignored and disenfranchised, because let's face it, the big population bases are the ones that get the most attention, but the smaller and towns and rural communities really have issues that are kind of unique to them, and I know them well.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you, do you have a past experience in politics or other things that you have tried or that have kind of piqued this interest for you?
I have basically been involved or interested in politics since I was 16 years old, doing student council things in junior high and high school. I've always, you know, run for some crazy office or another. When we moved out here to Malino, I helped to form our unincorporated rural Malino community into the hamlet of Malino, which is an actual recognized entity with Board of County Commissioners, so that we can have a voice for our community, we can get resources out here, and we can have a say, even though we're not a city and we have no taxable base, we are actually able to now be represented. I've been on budget committees and so many committees, you know, I lose track of them all.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. Well, tell us a little bit, because I love Malino. We actually live out toward that area and pass by or stop when we're visiting the fruit stand or things. But maybe for folks who don't know too much about the little town or little hamlet of Malino, why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, Malino's been around since like 1843. Used to be a grist mill on Milk Creek. Actually, that old building is still there with the big grist mill stones, and they ground wheat and use the power from Milk Creek to power the mill. It is just seeped in history. Used to be agriculture and things. Now it's kind of a bedroom community to commuters in Oregon City, but we have a wonderful history. Going way back to 1843 was kind of the beginnings of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Tammy D's Cafe out there is one of my favorite breakfast places.
Can she not make cinnamon rolls like nobody else?
Oh my gosh, get out of town. Yeah, they're amazing.
Mexican food restaurant across the street is amazing. Mm-hmm. Also, if you haven't tried them, they started with a food cart in Malala and they just couldn't keep up. And so they rented the restaurant across the street from Tammy D's. And so if you're in for good Mexican, go there.
Gotcha. Yeah, the feed stores out there, that's usually what brings me to the area, Union Mills.
Union Mills, great people. Yes.
Yeah. You and your husband, David, run your own trucking business. Is that right?
It's true. Yes.
It's a difficult time for it being in that industry these days, huh?
It really is. And it might be getting more difficult once the tolls hit 205, because Dave drives through that corridor to deliver loads to his customers six times a day. So when that expense goes up, guess what? He's going to have to pass that on to his customers, who are then going to pass it on to the consumers. And it's just a vicious cycle of taking money.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry, Laurel, the audio actually dropped out a little bit there, but I assume you're talking about gas prices.
I am talking about gas prices and tolls on freeways.
I was able to piece together the context there.
Yeah, gas prices and tolling on the freeways.
Laurel, are you there?
I am.
Oh, sorry. Lost you again. We seem to be having a bad connection. Are you in an area maybe that you could?
I'm in the best area in my house.
The best place we can do. Okay. We will soldier on. So when did you enter the race for Congress?
I think my filing date was February 10th.
Okay. And how have you been campaigning, getting your name out there? How's it been going?
It's been going really well because I determined from the beginning that I was going to do it myself. A person ought to be able to run to represent their community without having to hire a lawyer or pay $10,000 to a campaign consultant, especially House of Representatives. I'm supposed to be representing the people in the district. And if I have to go out and hire lawyers and consultants, it's been a huge learning curve. So I have been doing it myself, and I have a campaign manager, which is my son, and he's brilliant on the technology. So he's got that kind of taken care of, but really it's going well. And I refuse to buy the seat by dropping $500,000. I am hoofing it. I'm driving around, knocking on doors, meeting people, putting up signs, and trying to talk to the people that I will represent.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, Laurel, is how the last redistricting process and the pretty drastic redrawing of the our congressional district, the 5th district, affected your decision. Because for a number of years, a couple of decades anyway, our district had included a large portion of kind of the coastal area. And it was redrawn to now include, some central areas, including Bend. Tell us a little bit about kind of that process. Were you pretty, maybe not involved, but pretty kind of invested in following the redistricting process?
I did. And there were several maps floating around, and I kept crossing my fingers. Please let it be this one. Please let it be that one. Yeah. I was in District 3. Canby was probably in the old District 5. So Kurt Schrader's right. Always been your representative.
I think we've always been in 5 since the 80s anyway.
Yeah, which was East Portland all the way. I was in that district.
Yeah.
Of mostly Portland and stuff. So small towns were Estacada and Molalla and Clackamas, and some of those small towns just really had no voice at all. When I looked at the map, when the map was finally rubber stamped by the governor and said, this will be the new thing for 10 years, I was actually pretty excited because I'm just like, okay, those are my people. I coached the boys tennis team at Molalla High School. We play state and we play Sweet Home. We go down to Lebanon. Those are the communities I'm familiar with, and the issues going on in that community are pretty much the same as the ones going on here in Molalla.
Yeah. Absolutely. Very cool. You might be one of the few Republicans that was cheering on at least this part of the map that went through the redistricting process. So Laurel, what do you kind of think of your chances? This is a new district. From a lot of the analysis I see politically, it looks like it's pretty close to as close to a toss up as you can get. Is that kind of your again, without investing in fancy lawyers and whatnot, is that what you've kind of seen or determined as well?
I have. Yeah. Although, you're going up against Kurt Schrader, in the beginning, actually, I'll admit I voted for Kurt Schrader, but he's changed and he's just, farmers are frustrated. I'm talking to grass seed farmers. Hazelnuts, which I call filberts because, I'm a true Oregonian and they're filberts, but they're just like, they cannot get foot in the door with him anymore. And that's kind of what helped me decide too. It's like, Kurt, you can't just go there and become an East Coast elite person and forget about people who sent you there. And one of the candidates doesn't even live in District 5, which, although that's not illegal, it really bothers me. I think you should live in the district of the people that you're going to represent. That's just my personal feelings and opinion. And then, you know, the other candidates are fine men. And I, you know, we have a good pool of people to choose from, but I think I really have, you know, a greater understanding of, especially, you know, the farmers and the small towns and the rural communities. I think I have an understanding of what they need from a representative and what I'm going to have to do when I get back to DC.
Yeah. I guess I really applaud and appreciate your focus on the local communities. I know that that's something that can be really frustrating, and that folks in the rural areas and smaller towns can feel, you know, like DC is just, you know, a completely different universe, basically, and that they just don't matter. I guess, you know, how do you envision that might, that you might, through your work, if you were able to win this race, you know, if you were put in this position, how would you go about trying to influence that or change that in the nation's capital?
Well, I have done enough research to know that it's getting on the right committees and either forming or joining the right caucus groups so that there's more power in numbers. So let's say, you know, I belong to Timber Unity. It's now called ONRI. And their frustrations have just fallen on deaf ears. So getting on the right committees to where the timber industry can be heard from someone who lives in a timber heavy state, there's no point in non-timber heavy states populating the timber committees. Same with farming. Farming isn't a huge portion of your state. And if your farmers are hurting, then I need to be able to get on those committees. So I am, you know, I'm hoping to join with other Republicans from communities that have those same issues and kind of become our own squad, our own force to be reckoned with, our own network of people who start advocating for the industries that are impacted the most by decisions being made.
William. Laurel, I think I want to ask you, why Congress? You've been involved in local politics. Like you said, you were instrumental in helping to establish Malino as a hamlet. I wonder if, and I'm sure you've thought about it, but, you know, why not the legislature, or at least start there? You know, is that some place where maybe you would be able to make more of an impact here in Oregon and for at least the small communities immediately, you know, that you would represent?
Well, because I feel like at least the Republican Party in the state of Oregon, the Republicans that are in there are doing a really great job. I mean, I wouldn't run against Christine Drazen. She is a wonderful representative. The Republicans who are most interested in state politics, I support. So I would not run against them. My interest, my talents, and my knowledge base and understanding has always been on the national level. United States history has always been way more of an interest of mine than Oregon history. So it's just, that's kind of where my whole focus and draw has been my entire life. That's just where my strengths lie.
Well, Laurel, I thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us today and introduce yourself a little bit. Can you share with folks your website and where they can find out more information?
My website is laurelrosesforcongress.com.
Anyone who wants to email me is voteroses@laurelrosesforcongress.com. And I'm on Ballotpedia, a lot of information, filled out all the surveys there. So if you want to read about my main platform, has 6 bullet points and they're fairly clearly outlined there. If you have any personal questions, I'm also on Facebook, Laurel Roses for Congress on Facebook. And I check that quite frequently and post new fun stuff. Me and my granddaughter went out yesterday and put up some signs. She's 8 years old. She's so excited. She's going to be president now that she's putting up signs for me for Congress. So it's, you know, just kind of getting the next generation excited to be involved has been fun.
Hey, anybody can do it. I mean, I guess you do have to wait a few years, but.
Yes. She actually could do a very good job right now. The girl's smart as a whip.
Yeah, I'd be hard to, anyway. anything else, Laurel, that you would, that you wanted to talk about or that you'd like to share?
Right. I just want to make sure that people understand the reason I'm running. I'm committing myself to term limits. I believe in term limits. I will fight for term limits. For the very reason we limit the president, we really need to limit Congress, because what happens is that people go there and they lose their focus on who sent them there and what their job is. A representative should be exhausted by the end of the session because they're talking with constituents at home and they're going to the committee meetings, and just doing the work is exhausting if you do it right and remember the people back home. There seems to be this elite hierarchy that has been established because there's career politicians, and Kevin McCarthy's speech, "Rules for Thee and Not for Me," was huge for me back in November, which kind of started my brain turning. Someone's got to do something, and I decided to be one of those someones.
Well, I know it's an uphill battle, and it's especially hard out there pounding the pavement and doing it the way you're doing. But that is kind of what it comes down to. That's sort of the noble picture of what politics is meant to be, is that, meeting people face to face and meeting your neighbors and representing them. So thank you, Laurel, for taking time to do that. And we wish you the best of luck in your efforts.
You're welcome, Tyler. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Frankie, how many times do I have to ask you for those audio files? I need them for the next episode.
I know. Man, I told you I'm trying to upload them now, but it's taking forever.
That's super weird. I thought your new internet provider was like super fast speeds.
Well, I thought so too. I mean, sometimes it goes really fast, but then I get heavy lag and glitches when I'm trying to make FaceTime calls or play games. It has cost me quite a few missions on Call of Duty Warzone, I can tell you. Even the videos on my doorbell cam come in jittery sometimes.
Well, Frankie, other than being very bad at video games, sounds like it's trouble with your upload speeds. Most internet providers only talk about their download speeds, since those are usually way faster.
Okay, hang on a second. You're telling me there are 2 types of internet speeds?
Yup. And upload speed is just as important as download. Think about how much stuff we send up to the internet. Like the video of you that your friends see on the FaceTime call, or the response to your commands when you're playing action video games.
You're right. It sounds like I have slow upload speeds. Wish I would have known that when I signed up for internet.
Unfortunately, a lot of providers only tout their download speeds when talking about their services. That's what sets DirectLink apart. Not only do they openly advertise them, but their upload speeds are up to 10 times faster than other providers in the area. They know how important it is to have clear video when on that Zoom interview you have for your dream job, or when you're trying to catch those porch pirates that are stealing all of your Amazon packages and the Christmas things that you got for your, you know what? It's not a big deal. Give DirectLink a call to get started at 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop/internet.
I got a grudge against those.
I'm still waiting for my teddy bear to show up.
Hey, I'm AJ. I'm your local Odmos franchise owner.
I'm Mike, co-founder of Odmos.
And we're the hosts of The Odd Pod, a podcast about
life in the pizza industry. We're going to have on some franchisees. We're going to have some different vendors on. We're going to get a snapshot of what goes on behind the scenes in the pizza world.
Don't forget to tell them about the sports.
They're sports.
And the crazy wacky pizza that we have every Wednesday that we create. And we also have a special guest every week as well.
And I'm Gage, Odd Pod senior sports analyst.
Gage, who gave you that title?
Me.
Oh boy. Find us on Spotify and Apple Music and the Podbean.
Are you a healthcare hero? Do you want to become one? Are you looking for a position where you are valued, your time is your own, and you have ample opportunity for growth? Marquee companies at Hope Village in Canby, Oregon offers all of that and more. They are currently hiring nurses, caregivers, CNAs, and enrolling students in their free CNA course. From competitive wages and up to $25,000 tuition reimbursement to flexible schedules and the opportunity to make a positive impact on someone's life, Marquee at Hope Village is the right place for you. Take your career to the next level and apply now to become a valued team member at Marquee at Hope Village in Canby. To learn more or apply today, text CURRENT, that's C-U-R-R-E-N-T, to 888-906-3432.
Hey friends, warning, the following story is not suitable for children. Viewer and listener discretion advised. It contains the details of the Malala Forest murderer, scenes from about 30 years ago, and it contains elements of extreme sexual, physical, and psychological violence. Viewer and listener discretion advised.
Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. They're open daily, and you can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grand Street in downtown Canby, or connect with them on Facebook or through email at retrorevivaloc@gmail.com. On August 31st, 1987, Everett Banyard, 46, a crossbow hunter in pursuit of prey on a private 90,000-acre timber farm southeast of Malala, Oregon, nearly stumbled over the nude, partly buried body of a young woman. Over the next 5 days, searchers from the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office and a local explorer scout post would find 6 more decomposed bodies, all women, all nude, all, as it turned out, prostitutes from the Portland area, along the same hillside, less than 100 yards from each other. Authorities were soon calling the Malala Forest murderer the worst serial killer in Oregon history. Little did authorities know that the person who would later be convicted of the 7 murders was at that very moment sitting in the Clackamas County Jail, charged with the unrelated stabbing death of a Portland prostitute in a restaurant parking lot. Dayton Leroy Rogers, 33 years old when his bloodlust neared its peak, was fearsomely known to many of Portland, Oregon's prostitutes as Steve the Gambler. He would later say the violence first manifested in the form of a headache, inflicting on him a splitting, blinding white pain. Once he claimed that he could only be alleviated by the sight of another's pain, the sounds of her anguish, or ultimately the spilling of her blood. Dayton seemed personable enough on the surface, as long as he wasn't in the midst of one of his mood swings. He was well known in the small communities of Woodburn and Canby, where he was living at the time of his arrest in 1987, and people seemed to like him. A mechanic by trade, a skill he had learned in prison, Dayton ran a successful small engines repair business, was married, and even had an 18-month-old baby boy who friends said was his mirror image. Few people saw the cold evil that lay beneath the friendly veneer, and many of those who were unlucky enough to witness his dark side firsthand did not live to talk about it. Dayton's headaches seemed to worsen during the summer of 1987, and for that reason, he was away from home much of the time. He claimed that he was working at his shop during his absences, which ranged from a few hours to all night. His wife, Sherry, saw little reason at first to doubt him. When she would call to check up on him in the early evening, he usually answered the telephone. On the occasions that he didn't, he always had an excuse. He would explain that he had been in the middle of a project and hadn't wanted to leave it to pick up the phone. Or, more commonly, he would tell Sherry that he had gone out to get coffee, perhaps a bite to eat, anything that would convince her he was only taking a break to get away from the shop for a while.
Although she began to hear stories about him frequenting the local taverns and bars, she tried very hard to maintain the faith that she always had in him. She might have become suspicious of his activities sooner if only she had taken the trouble to check the mileage on his pickup. He put more miles on the truck in a single week than most people drive in a month. On August 7th, 1987, by 1 a.m., the man who called himself Steve the Gambler was back on Union Avenue, which was known as Portland's Prostitute Row, looking for some kinky action. After a short cruise, he stopped a blonde near the corner of Northeast Union Avenue and Wygant Street. He recognized her as a hooker he'd picked up before during the Rose Festival earlier that year. He pulled over and invited her inside. Recognizing him as a former customer, the woman didn't hesitate. She was Jennifer Lisa Smith, 25 and a mother of two, and she would be his final victim. Sometime prior to 3 a.m., they pulled into the parking lot of a Denny's restaurant on the 16,200 block of Southeast McLaughlin Boulevard in Oak Grove. With the taverns and bars having just closed, business was brisk there. It was the only restaurant open in the area at that time in the morning. James Dahlke, 50, had just arrived at the Denny's when she heard a woman screaming, help me, please help me, rape, I'm being raped. In the darkness, he ran towards two shapes that appeared to be a man and a woman struggling with each other. After his eyes adjusted to the darkness of the parking lot, Dahlke could not believe what he saw. He arrived on the scene to find a naked woman lying on the parking lot in her own blood. Charles Gates, a handicapped customer, was already there. "My God, he slit her throat!" exclaimed Gates, falling from his wheelchair. Experienced in first aid and emergency medical treatment, Gates noted the woman was not breathing and would not respond to questions. Finding no cardioid pulse and undaunted by all the blood, he immediately began CPR and mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, but to no avail. Smith had been stabbed no fewer than 11 times in the chest, back, and abdomen. A couple of minutes later, Dahlke spotted the man he'd previously seen by the nude victim. "That's him," he shouted. "That's the son of a motherfucker." The man jumped into his pickup, running over landscaping to escape the parking lot onto Southeast McLaughlin. By that time, two other bystanders, Stan Connor and Richard Bergio, had rushed over to see what was happening. Determined not to let the guy get away, Bergio sped out of the parking lot in his own car in hot pursuit of the pickup, at times at speed of over 100 miles an hour. Unable to keep up, Bergio took down the license plate number and returned to the crime scene. A short time later, Clackamas County Sheriff's Detectives John T. Turner and Mike Machado arrived at the crime scene. After being briefed on that morning's events, Turner took the license plate number and found the registered owner was Dayton Leroy Rogers, whose home was listed in the 10,500 block of South Hines Road in Canby. Detectives found the man not at home but at his shop. After a cursory glance around outside, they knocked on the door until a man with bloodshot eyes answered. Smelling of alcohol, the man identified himself as Dayton Rogers. He had a bandage on his hand, which he claimed was because he had accidentally cut himself with a hacksaw earlier. He said he had been at the shop all night drinking bourbon and strawberry mixer. But when officers asked why the hood of his truck was hot to the touch, he admitted he had driven to the Willamette Falls Hospital for treatment of his wounded hand. Of course, the truck and the license plate number were a perfect match to the vehicle numerous witnesses had said they saw leaving the scene of the murder just a couple of hours earlier, and Rogers was taken into custody. As detectives later probed deeper into Rogers' background, they learned that he had been in and out of jail for a variety of reasons, including parole and probation violations, and for kidnapping a local prostitute. All in all, the detectives learned Rogers spent 27 months in Oregon prisons. His parole was formally terminated in January 1983. One prostitute told detectives that Rogers had a foot fetish and found women's arches sexually arousing. Other prostitutes said that all of the dates occurred in the cab of Rogers' pickup and that he usually began by drinking crude screwdrivers crafted from mini bottles of Smirnoff vodka and orange juice bought from a convenience store. While prosecutors and detectives were building their case against Rogers, Everett Bernard was making his gruesome discovery on the Molalla River Forest. All six murders would eventually be tied to Rogers, whose modus operandi was to pick up prostitutes and take them to secluded areas to commit his heinous crimes. Smith had been the one who'd almost gotten away. In his first trial, which he was charged for the murder of Smith, Rogers pleaded not guilty but was sentenced to life in prison. He had later claimed self-defense, saying the victim had held a knife to his throat prior to his killing her. He was found guilty and sentenced to death after his subsequent trial for the slayings of six Molalla Forest victims, 23-year-old Lisa Marie Mock, 26-year-old Maureen Ann Hodges, 35-year-old Christine Lotus Adams, 20-year-old Cynthia DeVore, 26-year-old Nondance Nani Cervantes, and 16-year-old Riatha Giles. Both trials featured grueling accounts by several surviving victims who testified to Rogers' taste for bondage and torture, facts corroborated by the injuries inflicted on the murdered women, some of whom who had their feet cut off, possibly while still alive. Now 68, he currently sits on Oregon's death row at the Oregon State Penitentiary.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Hi, everyone. Donna Ellison. Anna Ellison with Ellison Team Homes. We wanted to come and talk to you today because we're super excited. A couple of things we're doing this month. We are one of the sponsors for the Camby Rodeo. Can't wait to see the rodeo because we love that. And the fair and all the kids. We've missed it for so long. So come see us this week at Camby Rodeo. Get your giddy on. And then the other thing we want to talk to you about, which is kind of the biggest news all year in Camby, is that we're back to being able to do our Camby Big Night Out and our Weekend Out.
Gonna be amazing. We have live music. All of the local businesses are showing up and supporting in any way they can, whether it's having food, having a tent. There's gonna be so many activities for kids to do. Also, stuff for adults as well. There's gonna be dancing. And we actually are gonna have
a dunk tank. And we're super excited. Right, my goal, which I think I'm hitting it, is to have at least one kind of well-known person every hour that we can throw balls to knock that person in the dunk tank. I'm not going to drop any names because I'm not that kind of a girl, but I will tell you we're going to have some really fun people that you're probably going to want to throw some balls at. We're going to do that part of it as a fundraiser for Fido Animals. You probably already know we partner with them so that we can help coming into this time of the year. Big needs for animals, which is really seniors and veterans and people that are not able to buy food. So we're doing that portion as a fundraiser. We're going to have swag. Come see us. We're super excited. The rest of our team, we can't wait to see you. It's been a long time. We're going to be outside. Of course, we'll be taking all of the precautions to make everybody safe. So come hang out and have fun with us.
Now Hear This Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.